Today I'm going to be talking about our experience at the University of Colorado in developing a new DMP-MPH dual degree. And we were unable to find another such dual degree in the country, and therefore we are pioneering our way and have now developed and have opened our DMP-MPH dual degree. So I'm going to talk about today the activity about looking at what the converging competencies were coming from the DMP side, the MPH side, and our interprofessional requirements. So I guess the first question we need to address is why the DMP-MPH dual degree? And here's sort of the overview ideas is that you often see articles saying experts agree that the public health workforce is ill-prepared to do X and Y and Z. Then within that the PHNs are found to be amongst the least educated of public health workers. And then when you look at the core competencies for all public health workers, I'll tell you a little bit more about this, we find that the PHNs are amongst the least proficient when you look at competencies expected for all public health workers. And of course, there's many new opportunities now with the Affordable Care Act that press us toward this dual degree. Strong nursing imperatives for moving to a DMP as opposed to our master's, which we've done before with the dual degree. And of course, having the MPH side with it allows the students who come into this dual degree to also attain then the most probably respected degree in public health, which is the MPH. So after that scathing report that the IOM made in the late 1980s, public health did well to identify what the vision was for public health, to identify the core functions, the essential services, and the general thought is that workforce development, however, has lagged behind those other activities. So I put these in quotes. You often see the public health workforce described as underprepared, insufficiently skilled, lacking in qualifications. So I think it kind of moves us toward this dual degree that we have in place. This is a slide that is from the recent enumeration report of public health nursing workforce across the U.S. that 39% of our public health nurses, their highest degree is a diploma or associate degree. 49% have a baccalaureate degree. 12% are in that master's degree, and less than 1% are prepared at the doctoral level. And I would comment here that there's been a lot of activity when we're talking about improving the public health nursing workforce, that a lot of activity has been in those lower educational levels trying to get our diploma and associate degree nurses to having their baccalaureate degree, which we've often talked about as the minimum. So the activity has been there, and I guess what I'm kind of here saying is that we've neglected those highest levels of educational preparation, and thus sort of one of our rationale for moving forward with the DMP-MPH. This slide shows more specifically about how public health nurses rank when they are looked at in relation to core functions for all public health workers. This is based on a study of over 1,000 public health workers in the state of Colorado I did in 2002. And of the six largest professional groups, This is the rank order of how they come out on the competencies, and it's almost clear across every single competency of the eight competencies that are eight domains, that administration and business score the highest, then the specialists, then environmental health, then the educators, then public health nurses, and they're right there with the nutritionists. So then there are a number of professional imperatives, obviously, that are moving us toward the DMP. The esteemed IOM report that education for nurses needs to be on par with other professionals. The AACN came out in 2004 saying that we need to convert our master's degree clinical specialty degrees to the DMP by 2015. That's next year. And you can look at the Quad Council across all the leading nursing organizations, all call for more highly educated nurses. You can look at the American Academy of Sciences. They're saying you need a clinical doctorate. So across sort of just many dimensions, there's these professional imperatives to moving us toward a doctoral clinical degree. This slide shows that transition that the American Association of Colleges of Nursing has suggested, and I'll just give you the update from the recent RAND Corporation report that came out last month. There are now 250 DMP programs in 48 states and the District of Columbia. They also found, however, that many schools of nursing are keeping their MS programs as well as developing the DMP, so that in anticipating a shift totally of the master's to the DMP, the schools may be in transition, but there is some evidence that there is going to be both master's and doctoral preparation for our clinical specialties. So, current state of the dual degrees with public health. In 2013, there were 34 MSN MPH dual degrees, and that's up from 25 programs in 2000, so that's a 36% increase. So there was some thought that those programs are closing, and there's less of them, but the data shows from AACN shows that there's more now than there were at the beginning of the 21st century. And the University of Colorado is the only university that's offering the DMP, MPH, dual degree. And we're hearing there might be some others that are in development, but AACN does not have that on record yet. So as a pioneer in this new dual degree, the key question then is what should be the core curriculum for this DMP, MPH? So now I'm going to shift to the University of Colorado experience in doing the DMP, MPH. It was a joint project from the two schools. The College of Nursing has been around since 1898, so it's an old school. The Colorado School of Public Health, on the other hand, has a six-year history. It's a brand new school on our campus. College, of course, has been in the top-tier ranking kind of thing. The Colorado School of Public Health is complex. It's a three-university collaboration in the state. And it offers already four other dual degrees. And the idea when the concept of the Colorado School of Public Health was going forward, the idea always was that there would be a dual degree, MPH, with each of the professionals, other professional schools. So we're amongst the last to sort of make that. But we're excited that we're making it at the DMP level. So we needed to, for our dual degree, to meet two minimum requirements. One is that you meet the accreditation requirements of the two associations that govern that degree, and that we need to be able to prepare our graduates for certification. There then is four competency sets that need to be addressed or included. They need to be from the DMP. There's the DMP competencies, which then as a sub part of that, the PHN specialty core competencies that you're all familiar with from Quad Council, Tier 2 and 3 level. We needed to meet the MPH competencies, and then the fourth comes in there with the interprofessional educational, which there's, if you're not in the academic setting, you may not know that each of the associations that govern medicine and pharmacy, dentistry, public health, all of the health sciences have agreed that we will achieve these interprofessional competencies within each of our disciplines. So, from the DMP, there are 8 domains and 42 specific competencies. I'm just going to show a few of what they are, so you'll get the sense about how the redundancy is working. Those competencies include scientific underpinnings for practice, organizational system leadership, systems thinking, analytic methods, evidence-based practice. Anyway, there are 8 of them. From the MPH side, there are 12 domains that are required, and there's 119 specific competencies. Those include biostatistics, environmental health, epidemiology, health policy, communication informatics, program planning, you get the sense, systems thinking. The specialty competencies then from PHN, from those 8 domains, there are 93 specific competencies within that. And those include, these might be the most familiar to most of you, but include the analytic assessment skills, policy development, program planning, communication, cultural competencies, financial planning, get the gist there of those 8. Then from IPE, there are 4 domains with 38 competencies. So here is the problem. We've got 42 coming from DMP, 93 from the PHN, 113 and 38 equal 292 competencies. Unmanageable. So the task then was to try to identify what are the redundancies across the competency set so that we could have some kind of manageable way of identifying competencies. And then you can go to what are the existing courses, what new courses needs to be developed, and then what kind of efficiencies that you get. So our methodology was to, we committed ourselves to an iterative process with a clear goal about the redundancy. We merged our 4 sets into 1 document, reread the 292 competencies, used a qualitative content analysis, and came up with emerging themes across all sets. So visually, this is what we did. We moved them into a manuscript, and we were trying to identify what are the overlapping. So you see that in a Venn diagram. This is the result, and I'm not going to spend much time talking about them. They're in alphabetical order. Going from advanced nursing practice is convergent, advocacy, assessment, biostatistics, includes communication, cost effectiveness, diversity, environmental health, I'm just picking a few out, evidence-based practice converges, financial management, health policy, information systems, leadership, population focus, and all the way down to workforce development. So there are 25 themes that emerged from this 292 competencies that permit some better focus and avoiding of redundancy of coursework. And I just put a note there that not all competencies are convergent, so there's still some unique to a particular set there. But these provide, I think, great direction for us in our planning. Then just to tell you that in the development, looking at those competencies, putting them into degree plans, we end up with a DMP with the public health emphasis is a 43-credit program. The MPH alone was 42. The dual degree, we were able to, by identifying those redundancies, get it down to 61 credits. So there is, so 65 versus 85 if you took the two degrees separate, saving 24 credits. So obviously the advantage is time and money. And so we now have an online program with in-state tuition for all the western states. The minimum requirement is a bachelor's. We began enrollment this fall for the first, admitted the first 10 students. And the interesting thing to me is that given a choice, they could have done just the DMP in public health nursing, or they could do the dual degree. 9 of them chose to do the dual degree, and the other one already had an MPH. So we literally have everybody in the dual degree. And the interest is very brisk. We have over 150 inquiries on the list. So just in summary then, what does our work at CU bring to public health? First is that the identification of these 25 converged competencies should be helpful to others who are developing a DMP-MPH program. And I think secondly, when evaluated, our program could be a model curriculum for others that are working forward. And I think the other thing that we really bring to public health now is an available DMP-MPH program where students can come in at this point and earn an efficient dual degree. I wanted to acknowledge my co-authors in this, Marilyn Krychek, I know is in the room. I don't know if any other members of our team is. And we need to acknowledge, of course, the generous fund from HRSA that provided the support both for the implementation and the development of this program. We got a $1.25 million grant to do that. So thank you.
Presenters could join me at the table and we'll go ahead and take questions. Sure, go ahead. Maybe a little louder.
I have a question for Dr. Stenberg.
I have to think because I wanted to be right. I didn't even bring the. I can tell you in about 1 minute. Let me look in. You have it? Yeah. Kathy's going to look at it. It's 43. So 43 in the DMP with just the public health focus is 43.
And so how many hours of, you know, you have 1,000 hours.
We designed this as a post-master's DMP, which you got to sort of start with some assumptions. So the assumption is that nurses who've got a master's in public health nursing come in with 500 hours already, and then there's another 500 hours in the capstone project and in the advanced
public health nursing practicum.
So the real, so a whole BSN to DMP and PhD is more than...
There is an evaluation. Actually, no, it's not. They come into the dual degree and have a curriculum plan that's got the 61 hours, but they have not had all of the course, the practicum hours that they take in the MPH program count toward that, but it won't be a full 1,000 in their public health courses. So we have a note at the bottom that says that there's an evaluation of what you've had and what you take in the MPH program, but the total hours, of course, has to equal 1,000.
So, as far as we know in the state of Minnesota, what we do is they work in a precepted setting. Obviously, when they're in Alaska, they're working one-on-one with a PHN. And then as faculty members, we go and do a site visit at least once during their rotation to be able to meet with the staff one-on-one to do the evaluation piece. And then I'm the one that's still receiving their assignments, doing that weekly phone conference with them and grading their assignments. We haven't had any issues with the cross-state boundaries. I know, especially with the DMP programs, I think that has come up, but not that I'm aware of between Alaska and Minnesota. So, good question.
I was going to ask Dr. North a question in relationship to your RN to BSN students. How do you handle the clinical for them? Are you finding the sites for them? Are you asking them to find the sites? And then a follow-up to that would be, what kind of input do you get from the preceptors that they have? Or, you know, how does the evaluation work out?
So, fun question. The clinical sites have been a lot of fun. When I took on the lead role, I started asking, first of all, they've passed the needles and tubes test, so this is their chance to play with something really different and really see a different side of nursing. So I'm less interested in them following through specifically on direct patient care kind of clinical visit sites, which we've lost a lot in public health anyway. It's been really hard to get out our students out there. So I say I want them to do things that are directly at that population level, which opened up so many cool doors. And, of course, when they're there, I ask them to do things like be aware of staff as population and who else are all of the populations that we're aware of. And so they, for the most part, OHSU, you know, Big Dog University, has lots of contracts with lots of spaces. The trick is actually negotiating territories so that we can fit our students in amongst undergraduate and MPH and everybody else's students. And because we're looking at that population level, it's actually a little easier to find sometimes places for them because they don't have to be with a nurse. We just have to tie in the nursing elements. And with that said, we have a lot of students. Next term, I have 61 clinical students across the state to manage. So we have people in really different places that haven't been with us before. So, yes, if they have some interesting sites, then they bring it to us in enough time, and then we navigate the contract. Did I get the follow-up, or what was the? Preceptor.
Do you use a preceptor model?
So we definitely use a preceptor model. Again, they don't have to be nurses necessarily. Most of them are in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, us as faculty provide that nursing tie-in for them to help them really see that flip. And the course discussion questions also help them to really think through that. I must say, probably the biggest thing that we get to deal with, this is currently week 8 of the term, the biggest thing we get to deal with, and those of you who teach population probably are aware of, is the F word. From all the students, and in this case, I mean flexibility. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they're just freaking out. I want to check off all my stuff. And there has to be a finish at the end of this 10 weeks. And it's like, not in population. And I've got to say, a really quick wahoo for us. I had two different students that I was their preceptor in a guided thing that was not directly a contract. And the first student did kind of a boilerplate grant for this community kitchen service model that I'm on the board of. And, of course, that student was like, kind of, what am I doing? Is this really doing anything? Second student took that and applied it to an Oregon Community Foundation grant with a lot of structure and support, of course, kind of, but doing some of the legwork that other people don't have the time to do. We just won a $19,200 grant. I was able to let both those students know from their respective terms that, yes, their stuff did do something, but it was just one, two, or three terms down the road.
Mm-hmm. Great. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'd like to thank you all for a very enlightening session and thank the presenters for their good work. Have a good afternoon.